Welcome back to the LFA Talks podcast, part of the Luís Ferreira Alves International Photography Prize, a contemporary look at architecture. This is a space for conversation and reflection, where photography is not just a way of recording architecture, but a way of thinking about space, memory, light, and time. In each episode, we talk with photographers, architects, curators, and researchers about architecture and the image. Some conversations are analytical, others are more personal. Some feel almost like visual essays. But they all start from the same conviction, that photography is never just documentation. It's also interpretation, attention, and presence. My name is Maria Neto. I'm an architect, researcher, and part of the team behind the LFA Talks podcast. And today, we invite you into a conversation about silence, atmosphere, and the enduring power of the architectural image. I'm very delighted to welcome one of the most significant voices in architectural photography today, Hélène Binet. Over more than three decades, Hélène Binet has transformed the way we understand architecture through photography. Her images don't simply show buildings. They reveal textures, shadows, fragments, intervals of light. They ask us to slow down and really look. Working mainly with analog photography and very often in black and white, she has collaborated with architects like Peter Zumthor, Zaha Hadid, Daniel Lipskind, and many others. But what feels specially relevant today in the way her work resists speed, the way it holds onto ambiguity, silence, and open interpretation. Joining us at different points in this conversation will be the architect and professor Pedro Leoneto, coordinator of the Luís Ferreira Alves Award, and will bring in some of the broader cultural and critical questions that Hélène's work raises. Hélène, thank you so much for being here. I would like to start at the very beginning. And before photography became your language, Hélène, what first drew you to architecture, to looking? Was there a moment or maybe a series of encounters where you understood that photography could be a way of inhabiting space?
Hello, everybody. And thank you, Maria Neto and Pedro Neto, for this invitation. I'm always quite excited to speak about why I have this passion for photographing space. So thank you. How did it all start and why photography and why space? I often think about it. And I grew up in Rome, so beautiful city, a lot of life, a lot of stones, a lot of wonderful building. Home educated would mean lots of free time running around. So this must have been an impact in my, in my sensibility. And I did a photographic school. It was quite commercial. But then I started to meet architects in London in the middle of the 80s. And then suddenly I thought that all this tactile, sensorial experience that I had in space in Rome were also linked to very strong ideas, very strong wondering, very big question about who we are and where do we go in this world. So I realized that I could bring this together with a photograph, and I kind of jumped into this field that was very different from what I was doing before. It was more theater and people. So, yes, it's encountering of people, places, and situation that made me realizing that that was something I really wanted to do.
And there's something deeply patient in your relationship with architecture, I would say, that it's almost contemplative. And how did that way of looking develop? And do you think working with analog photography shaped somehow that rhythm of attention?
I mean, I think for me to take time, I'm a slow person, it's something quite natural. I prefer to look at something over a day and see how it changed with different moments of the day, then run around and to be maybe an action photographer. So there's always something that belongs to your deep kind of who you are in this world. And But to work slowly with analog was also part of my training. That's what we did. And it came just the right combination. I took on a big camera, the 4x5, the something that needs a tripod, that needs preparation. I didn't take as a beginning a 35 mil, so I could have been also faster with another technique. So it was something that somehow fitted my way of working. And also, you know, I jumped in this world of architecture, joining the Architecture Association in the late 80s, and I didn't know much about architecture. So photography was more a way to understand than to represent, because I didn't know. So I was almost like taking apart this architecture in the beginning, piece by piece, details of John Hedrick. What is this architecture? What is it made of? Why do you have this feeling when you see it? So, yes, at the beginning, it was a tool for understanding, and that needed reflection and time, more than saying, you know, I'm going to represent this object. So I think I was lucky to be confronted with something that I didn't know. So, and also, we didn't have so many images of this, let's say also this new type of architecture. There was a Libeskind, like we'll talk later, Zaha Hadid. So the what sort of image is necessary to have for a new type of architecture, and what is about? So I think this was a good start. I mean, a lucky start, let's say.
Yeah, for sure. And you have spoken before about encounters and influences somehow. And I would love to ask about Lucien Hervé in particular. What did his work or his presence teach you? And how did you find your own visual language from there?
So very on, again, why did I love black and white photography more than color photography? You're always wondering what makes you making decision. It was clear that I love reduction, I love abstraction, I love the photograph of Man Ray. So, you know, black and white was my field. And but I was worried somehow that architecture photography could be a bit severe or rigid or not poetic. And when I discovered Hervé, I thought, no, it can be very emotional. I call him the Cartier-Bresson of architecture photography. it can be lyrical. So it gave me the trust that in that field, I could sing and not be rigid. There was place for playfulness. And I think that's what he taught me. Man Ray gave me the idea that you can experiment. You know, you can start to look things from underneath at night in a very abstract way. And poetic was what Lucien Hervé taught me, that it's possible to do.
Perfect.
Definitely important encounters.
Yes, for sure. And following this idea of poetics, and that you were speaking about the influence of Hervé, and listening to you, I cannot help thinking about how rare this idea of authorship has become within contemporary image culture. Today we are surrounded by an immense production of architectural images, as you know, very fast, polished, endlessly circulating. And yet many of these images seem strangely interchangeable, meaning that there is often very little sense of a gaze or a position. Your work feels very different from this condition. And I'm thinking, for example, of your photographs of Daniel Libeskind's Jewish Museum in Berlin, while the building was still under construction. This is a project that could easily have been photographed as a strong architectural statement, architectural object, or as a recognizable icon. Your images, with your images, it becomes something more personal, more interior, more difficult. a world of cuts, voids, raw surfaces, oblique light. We can talk about death, silence, a certain poetry. So in Daniel, in Libeskind's own reflection of on your work, he writes about the ambivalent power of photography. So its capacity to replace the physical experience of space, but also to undermine architecture when it reduces it to certain angles, certain lights, certain photogenic effects. And in your case, however, I think the photograph seems to do the opposite. It does not simplify the architecture. It makes its experience more intense. And in this sense, there is always a strong awareness of framing, absence, fragmentation, and duration in your photographs. And in some way, I think I can say that this reminds me of the legacy also of Luís Ferreira Alves, not stylistically, of course, because your visual language is very distinct, but in the sense that both approaches resist photography as a mere visual conception. Do you feel that photography today still has that capacity to slow perception down and to create a more attentive relationship with architecture?
I think the medium is very important in a sense that what we look on our phone or what we look on a wall or a book, these are the moment where maybe even the same image can have a completely different impact. So for me, the wall, like the exhibition, the books are a very important moment of let's say the story of talking about space and talking about architecture. And I believe they can change your way of seeing. They can influence your way of perception, because perceiving a space is so complex. And we enter somewhere, like John Hedrick was saying, we are digested. We are entering a body. No other form of art allowed you to have so many to enter and so many influence of visual sounds. It might be cold, it might be very busy, it might be the tactile experience. All of this makes us be in a different way. So poor photography, you put a lots of weight to, and I definitely agree that, you know, photography is a photograph. It has nothing to do with the real experience of space. But still, we want to sing the space. We wanted to say something, and I think with one note, with one reduction, with one sound, maybe we take you back in your imagination to that space. Maybe one experience only. Everything that will be impossible. It will be an extremely tense image that will not slow your perception, will not allow you to see better, will not allow you to dream about the space. So definitely I agree that it's influencing you, because one moment we'll see, oh, I didn't notice that actually, you know, the texture, it's so much in relation to where it is in this space. And you somehow start to be, especially if you're not an architect, much more critical about how a space is made of different moments. But let's not be so precise. I think it's more a relationship also with your dream of what you know, what you remember, and the image you are seeing that is important. So, yes, definitely a great influence.
Yeah. And as you said before, Ellen, your images so often focus on fragments, a wall, a shadow, a surface, rather than the whole building. And I was immediately thinking about the Mondrians of Luís Ferreira Alves that we talked in the second podcast. And what draws you to that? Is fragmentation a way of taking architecture apart in order to get closer to its atmosphere?
I wanted to understand how the body relate to space very much. That's, let's say, a very important part of when you photograph. You know, yes, you have your camera, but I have also myself position in different place. And of course, one of the most extreme position is the one when you reach a wall, because you reach a wall and you know you can't go forward. And this is a moment where you say, okay, I can't go forward. So we are very powerful as human beings. When we can't go forward, we start to imagine. So if I have to somehow take what in architecture, yeah, maybe threshold also, because it's about decision, but what are the powerful element, fundamental element of architecture that somehow I like to depict, because they are the most influential in our feeling of the space. The wall is one of them. And in Suzhou Garden, of course, it was incredible because it was covered with this nature that somehow is entering the place, and it's like lichen and moss that remind you of old Chinese paintings. So lots of reference in the thermal bath of Vals is the presence of light and the stone and how the light brings the stone, but also how you realize that this building, it's made of water, stone, and light. They have the same importance in building the space. So, and the wall is somehow recording all these different moments, which are the, let's say, the base of the making of the space. So it's not always the same reason, but it is one important body relation that it's simplified can tell you a lot about how do we feel when we are somewhere.
Yeah, and maybe that's why light in your photographs feel almost like a material, not just illumination, but something tactile, something that shapes the emotional quality of space, for sure. And how do you actually work, Ellen, with light, and how much of that involves simply waiting, as we were saying before?
I mean, light, most of the time, it's the sunlight. I don't use so much artificial light. So, of course, knowing the full range, you need time. You need a day, but I didn't need the season also. You know, you will need... I like to go back to different place, to different season, to the same place. So the equation is extremely clear. And, you know, we can't rush because the sun does what it wants to do. And then you wait for 6 o'clock and then the cloud comes. You have to come next day. But let's say that the light doesn't have always the same value, because if I think about Libeskind, which is, you know, a place about void, which was rather difficult to grasp as an image, and also location and the fact that every window that brings the light, it's a line that connects you to inner city, to a place where a Jewish family was murdered, or was taken away. So light become also space, because and time, it link you to an event, it link you to a space. So it's more than just something it is that is there to allow you to see the material, and it has a great power. If I think about let's say Picchioni's, maybe you know this footpath in very textural stone that I photograph in Greece. I would say the light is like a beautiful dress. It's putting on the stone, they become more beautiful, more attractive. You see how they are made, how they've been used over the years. So it doesn't have that kind of complex, let's say, meaning, but it is very important because suddenly the stone are there in their more charming, let's say, state. And if I have to think about La Tourette of Le Corbusier, in that case, for me, light become music. It's a way of connecting with some of the part of the building that have a reference to music. So yes, it is important. Yes, it becomes a body, but I also try to enter the project and understand it deeper. What did the light mean for that project? Mm-hmm. And it's an important tool to tell something, because yes, when you look at a photograph, you are not in the building.
So. Yeah. And And exactly talking about music, I think there's also this strong sense of silence in your work. Even when figures appear, the images stay still. Is that something you consciously look for, or does silence just come through the process of looking?
I mean, I work a lot with the process of reducing. I want black and white, I want details, I don't use big white angle. It's all about images that are very somehow concentrate. And if we reduce, we reduce energy. So we think that silence could be also associated with that. I won't say that it's always there in the photograph. I think in some project for me, I want the image to sing, and I wanted there to be quite expressive, and silence is not really important, but it's definitely one of the tools that I can use to create a space that is neutral, or let's say open enough, because the silence is also an opening. Yeah. If I silent now, you feel you can talk. Exactly. So I want you to enter my picture more than say, you know, I'm outside. I want you to enter with your imagination. So creating that, let's say, a bit of void and a bit of silence, it's an invitation.
It is. And many of your photographs of historical spaces feel inhabited not just by architecture, but by time itself, by traces. And what draws you to ruins or to spaces marked by long duration?
It's the big, I think, fascination we all have for ruin, because that is what you see and what it was, and the relationship between what you see and what it was. It's extremely, it's extremely open, because yes, it can be this part of this temple and had that role, but now it's maybe a bit collapsed, and plants are growing, and there's been some traces of people walking, so it has another presence. So it is a ruin, and you know, making a photograph is also making a ruin, because the moment you make a photograph, that moment will never exist again. So there's all this entangle that makes it extremely attractive. I think memory is very important in the way I work. I want you to interact. So how do you interact with the picture? You have a memory of some similar experience. And to have a memory, you also have to refer to something. I mean, you need tools to stimulate that, and an old stone, an old wall, a piece of wood that has been used, it's embedded with memory of touching, of rain, of climate, that are extremely attractive. So yes, I am attracted by this flow of duration, no? To the fact that we enter a space which is connected with time. It's very beautiful.
It's true.
It's important not to be too sentimental. Sometimes I have to restrain myself and give it a ruin, to also give it a contemporary reading, because I need to hold my hand and. But it is something I'd like to bring out, definitely. Yes. Thank you for raising it.
And we love it. So that's why we were asking. And I often feel in your photographs that they leave things open, and they don't explain everything at once. And maybe that's exactly what makes them stay with you. And I would ask Ellen, how important is ambiguity to you? And do you think an architectural image should leave room for the viewer to interpret?
I think it's really, really important you raise that question. And I often, there's the ambiguity and then, let's say, the space for the viewer. And John Berger, that wrote a lot about photography, when mm-hmm. he talked with Sontag, he mentioned that in every narration, we are always three. There's the story, there's who writes the story, and there's the reader. And in photography, it's the same. The reader has the, I mean, there's the architecture, there's the photographer, and there's the person that looks at the photograph. And what do I have to do to make sure that I give that space? And we talked about the silence, the openness, the generosity, and I think ambiguity, it is important, because if something is too well done, too finished, too clear, you say, okay, I've seen it, you pass on your phone or on your computer. But if you start to wonder, well, what is it? You know, is this wall forward or backward, because it has detail and then it's in the back, and then you have, you know, when you detail something and then you think if it has more detail, it's forward, but in that case, it's backward. Start to think, oh, I don't know exactly how this space is made. You create a question, and the moment you are having a question, you imagine. So definitely the ambiguity is important, which, you know, some architect could be a little bit saying, no, I want my message to be clear. But if you want to touch the person and really, like we say, stop and think and have a more meditative way, not like I have in front of the building, but instead in the middle of the photograph, you have to give that space, definitely.
Yes, I'm fascinating hearing you about time and how presence is the presence, the relation of your body with the space, with architecture, is so important. And it fascinates me in your work, the way the photography becomes less the information and more that presence. And I know that you normally visit, before you photograph, you want to visit the space, to encounter the space. And I'm thinking contemporary architectural culture, images are often expected to communicate instantly. Everything must be visible immediately. But your photographs seem to operate differently. I believe they ask for time. And in the case of Libeskind and his writings, and he says that architecture exists in both space and time, and it is almost paradoxical to capture that through a sequence of images. And your photographs of the Jewish Museum seem to respond precisely to that difficulty, in the sense that they do not try to replace the experience of the building with one definite image. Instead, you create a sequence of perceptions, partial, intense, silent, and through which the viewer begins to sense emotionally and the spatial depth of the work. It allows him to transport to that space, and perhaps this slowness creates a stronger form of memory. In this sense, do you think photography still has this possibility to resist the accelerated visual culture that we live in, or has our relationship with image fundamentally changed also?
I mean, two questions here. I'm glad you brought up the issue of the Jewish Museum and the way space and time and what to do with the photograph. And I think this is the first time I started to make series of images. I make triptych, I make the embedded art case, I made a set of photographs that I 9-square brought it together. Mm. So that image can sound together in a sense that the way we perceive, maybe in a diptych and triptych, we see something, and then we see it in another picture. So it's like reading, and we bring the concept of one image into another one. So is it a sense of failure that I need to do series, or is it just pushing photography forward? But I think it's a very important tool that we have, and you make books and you know that the books is also an incredible tool to create space, because we read one image in one page and then another, and then we remember. And this is all three-dimensional. So I think because we can somehow we can put this image in our pocket, and we can put it on a wall, we can put it in a book. We don't have all these powerful things of architecture, but we have others. And then I want to be back about the issue of slowness, and want to be back about books. Yes, we will keep looking on with, you know, on the screen very fast, and that's what it is. But we almost have to give it another name. You know, this is a way of something. Our brain is just used in one part of it, and it is part of our culture now. We cannot stop it. We cannot judge it. Yeah. It's just different. But books are still there. And when I talk with publishers, they say we make less book in a sense. We don't make 2,000, maybe 900 copies, but we don't make less book every year. People still want to have a book in their hand and enjoy the pages. So I trust that the object, the tactile, the slowness of a book. People love to go to exhibition. There's not less people going to exhibition. Yes. I haven't heard anything like this. Even maybe more, because online they've seen something and then they get curious. So I think good work and work that really stand for something will always be able to influence the way of dreaming or seeing or slowing.
Yes.
I'm confident.
Definitely. Perfect. Empowerment of books and analog is also what's happening.
Hélène, as we come towards the end, I would like to ask something a little more personal. After so many years photographing architecture across so many places, cultures, generation of architects, what still moves you and what still makes you stop?
I mean, it's a good question. We talked about the ruin, and but there's something I'm drawn into more and more, and it's nature. And maybe it's age. Nature, where, you know, I see that it's been landscaping, changed, transformed, or understood, or there's a building and there's a negotiation with the nature and the building. I can see that, you know, the way something has been built has a connection. And so gardens are definitely, so like the Quinta da
Conceição,
and Porto will be my next dream, going back to some places in India. I'm working on the garden in Somerset in the UK, where I go with different season. And is it really what now stop, let's say, my flowing of activity and say, yes, this is what I want to photograph now. And this is what gave me a great pleasure. Is it because finally I don't need to put all this straight line all the time? You know, you spend your life worry about straight line and be very disciplined. How do you compose and, you know, try to make out of something beautiful square and rectangular and think about composition that come from kind of 7th century Dutch painting, and all, you know, this is such a, and then finally it's an explosion of freedom. But it has to do with something which is design, and or where a building is. Let's say if I go for a walk in a mountain, that's not my first desire to photograph. It has to be this mediation between the nature and the human being that attracts.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely a new chapter.
Well, Hélène, in a moment where architecture is increasingly consumed through an endless flow of rapid images, I'm thinking what still gives a photograph this capacity to endure in memory? What allows an image to remain open, as you were also talking, and rather than becoming only another object of visual conception, a different thing, a different different space where you can enter and memory and time.
I think it's the appropriation of an image. And we already, as a photographer, we're quite if I photograph a place, I start to believe that that's my place. You know, you feel very kind of, this is my photograph. I mean, thermal bath becomes my place. You know, we're a little bit like this when we photograph. But then when we give it back to the public, we open up again with all sort of method. We talked about silence, ambiguity, series of images, but we want to give it back to the person, that the person can feel not outside the image, but inside, deeply inside an image, to be able to reflect on his own history, on his own wandering, on his own preoccupation in the world. It's not only about learning how beautiful a building is, because the building is there also to make us connecting with the world. So it's there to make sure we are warm or we are dry and we have a safe environment, but it's also often it's there to make us thinking. So let's go back to this and make sure that the person is looking at image can somehow maybe encounter also the first dream of the architect before he was building, the first sketch, the first thought, and make it his or her. I think in that case, the image will stay. Of course, you know, as a photographer, sometimes I don't give that possibility because my range of expression don't meet that person. It's not universal, of course.
Yes.
It is somehow something that you can share with people that will have something in common, and maybe other collector or fan of photography likes movement, they like color, they like action, and then my photograph will not say. But that's fair enough. We all have to believe in what we are good at and make something that we think we are strong enough to be able to pass on
our
experience to somebody else.
Yeah. So this sharing that you are talking about, I think, is no doubt important. And also, I believe, between the photographer and the architecture and architect, that he's capturing, photographing that space, that sharing also, and that understanding has to exist. Otherwise, I believe it would be very difficult for you to photograph spaces and architecture that you wouldn't feel that you share something important and that you understand in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, the knowledge of what the architect was doing and hoping to do or dreaming to do, and then having some kind of passion for it is very important, because if I start to photograph a building that is completely disconnected from my value, it will not work. No, that's also an important element to bring. There is this interpretation and relation with the score, which is the building and the architect, that has to be there, and you have to be able to enjoy it, to transform it.
And this is exactly what we are looking for with the Luís Ferreira Alves Award.
Yes.
So it's a perfect end. Helen, thank you so much for your time, your generosity, and for everything you share with us. This conversation is a reminder that photography can still be a form of attention, and perhaps even a form of resistance, a word so close to my heart. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back soon with more conversations around architecture, photography, and visual culture. Until next time.